Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And this is August the 30th in the year 2013. So we're live again. And I do want to say Julia is finally back. She's been gone for several weeks.
Cheers.
She's been in England all this time trying to get our England office moved to a different location. So she's only been back a couple of days and not even over jet lag yet.
Oh, I was over jet lag the first day.
Were you?
Yeah.
Usually it takes me a little longer than that. But there have been people on the radio asking where you were.
Oh, well, that's nice.
So she's back now, and then we're leaving again in the morning. We're going to Mexico, to Guadalajara. So it's kind of hard to keep us tied down in one place. Okay, but we do have some guests tonight, and I'm going to give out the toll-free number before we get started. The toll-free number for anyone who wants to call in and ask questions.
Of these speakers.
Yeah, because I would rather that if you call in and ask questions to stay with the speakers that we're interviewing tonight and to stay with that topic rather than go off on my books, because that's what we want to focus on. Okay, the toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And we have two guests on tonight because they are co-authors of a book that we published. And they're in different parts of America, so we were able to do the magic of the computers and the telephones technology, hooked everybody together. Kind of like a big conference call, I guess you would say.
Yeah, absolutely. A very big one.
A big one. So we have Maureen McGill and Nola Davis. And the book that they wrote that we published was called Live from the Other Side. Ooh. Okay. And Maureen, where are you in America?
So I live in Tacoma, Washington, there in Washington, where Nola lives as well. But I'm visiting my brother here in the Midwest, so I'm on Central Time outside of Chicago on Lake Michigan, this beautiful area.
I was wondering why you were in different parts of the country, because I know you're both old friends. But right now we're talking to you from Michigan then.
Right, Michigan City. It's actually in Indiana. It's on the border of Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan. Beautiful area.
Okay, all right. And then, Nola, you're out on the West Coast, aren't you?
I am. I'm in University Place, which is a suburb of Tacoma in the lovely Pacific Northwest. It's a beautiful day out here.
Okay, well, we still have the heat here.
Well, it's been...
And one thing I'm not looking forward about going to Guadalajara tomorrow is this supposed to be even hotter. Is it up to 100? So at least we'll be inside in a hotel. That makes good, makes it better. Okay. But, okay, well, we're going to talk about the book that they wrote. But first, I always want to start off by letting people know about you and your background. So let's do it one at a time, I guess. But it's amazing to me, both of you are really professional women, and how you got into this kind of work and how you ended up collaborating together. Right, Maureen, you start by telling them about your background.
All right. Thank you. Well, my background is I'm an associate professor at Pacific Lutheran University there in Tacoma, Washington, and I direct a dance ensemble. But in the last 12 years, I've been very interested in mind-body healing. I've always felt that in dance that the awareness extends beyond the body. And so I began to have an interest in body-mind therapies, and so I developed a course around that. And I've been studying that, and then that door opened up to really working with the intuition and trusting your gut. And I started to work with the tool in the tarot cards. So I've used the symbol of the tarot cards, and I've been working with that now for about 10 years and of loving this work and doing that professionally as well on the side. So, and then, you know, I've been interested in writing for quite some time, and Nola and I came together on my last sabbatical, which was doing this project of writing live from the other side, and we came together and wrote this book about messages from our loved ones from the other side. And now I'm on my next sabbatical here for the academic year, and I'm working on another book. So that's kind of what my venture is right now.
Okay, well, before the show is over, we'll get on to talking about the new project, too.
Thank you.
But you know, usually if you're interested in dance, then you are already, I think, intuitive and sensitive. Because I can tell the difference, you know, whenever you're into the arts, it's different from when people are in the numbers, the different parts of the brain that you operate from. So I can see
That's
why
very
you're
true.
Sensitive to this, and it all fits in anyway. Okay, now, Nola, tell them about your background.
Well, I have spent the last 35 years working in the senior health care industry, and in particular in nursing homes and assisted living. I came as an entry-level person as a bookkeeper after doing a major in college, and then I did that for a while, but actually found my home working in healthcare. And in the most interesting part about it was in hospice work and connecting with those people as they were moving through the final stages of their life. And that intuitive process of working with people and just helping hold that space as the soul gets ready to make its journey from this world into its next journey. And it's there where I just really found and connected to it. And perhaps some of that came from a near-death experience as a small child. And so I think it's been a natural progression to work in healthcare. And right now I'm a CEO of a Washington-based healthcare organization that specializes in senior care.
Mm. Well, Julia, you know, was a nurse for 20 years, and you worked in home healthcare, but not hospice, didn't you?
No, oh, I think I did one person in one place I worked. We did some hospice work, but I just did one home care. It was just one place I worked. But no, most of my stuff was just the traveling, just visiting the home health.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we worked in intensive care. Intensive you had care. People that were dying.
That's where
there.
I saw people dying, was intensive mm-hmm. care.
But anyway, you've been friends, you said, also for a long time. Is that right?
We have. We first met back in the late 90s, and I had an opportunity to have an introduction into Healing Touch. And then very shortly after that, Maureen became part of a Healing Touch practice group that was held in the basement of one of my buildings. And we would meet, there was a whole group of us, to practice our Healing Touch techniques on each other, as several in the group were working on their certifications. And so it just became a really nice venue. Great friendships came out of that, and Maureen's, and my friendship was one of those that came from moving into the process of alternative healing methodologies, which now it's not really alternative at all. It's become very
oh, we're finding
mainstream. Very, very mainstream.
We're finding that out because, you know, I've been in this field since the very, very beginning, 45 years ago, and nobody would have believed any of this back then. But now more and more people are going over into the alternative healing and the natural.
Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, it's mainstream. It is mainstream. It's becoming, I don't know, is mainstream what we want to call it? I think I heard you call it something else just now.
Well, years ago, and I'll say years ago, 15, 20 years ago in the Northwest, it would have been alternative. Now I have it available in the facilities that I oversee, and it's just part of complementary care services because it's part of a more holistic process of care for us as human beings.
Absolutely. We've come a long way, that's for sure.
We have.
I mean, I've seen it, you know, with this more or less, you know, struggling to get it to this point, but now all of a sudden it's like it's taking off. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why it has to go slow at first, and then it builds up steam.
Absolutely. Something you said, Nola, I don't know if we explored this before, you said you had a near-death experience when you were young?
I did. I had a near-death experience at the age of 2.
Oh.
Well, you want to tell us about it? Because I've had other people on the show telling about theirs, and I think it's interesting.
Absolutely. When I was 2 years old, and mind you, this was back in the mid-50s, and we lived in a small rural area in the state of Washington at that time. And what ended up happening was I had developed a really bad case of croup and was hospitalized, but I wasn't coming out of it. And it was just getting worse and worse. And at a certain point in that process, I remember seeing myself above the hospital bed and looking down and knowing that I had a connection with that child on that bed in that oxygen tent, but it wasn't to a point that physically I was feeling anything at that point. It was more like observing it and observing my parents in the room with a doctor and this sense of arguing that was going on. And then from there, I remember just being in this space where there was incredible light around me and there were forms around me which I would like to, what I feel are angels or whatever name people attach to, but there was a sense of being so tremendously loved and so tremendously held. And there seemed to be this great conversation that was going on. And I remember one in particular that stood beside me, and I remember saying, you know, I know I can do this. I know I can do this. I'll do it. I promise you, I'll do it. I have no idea what I promised, you know. If anybody asked me today, what did you promise? I said, well, you know, I've been working on that one for a long time. But, and so I remember at that point, one of them, and, you know, Dolores, it was very intuitive. So when I say heard, it's this intuitive process of just looking at each other and knowing exactly what's being communicated and being said.
Yes, yes, I know what you mean.
Absolutely. And then it was, I remember one of them saying, you know, this this is not going to be easy. And remember that only until it's time to remember will you remember. And then I remember being back in the bed, and I remember how tired I felt, but because it was like the physicality of being in the physical again was, you know, here I am. One minute you're absent of this physicality and this sense of physicality, and then the next minute you're back into it, and, you know, the battle your body is waging, you're fully present with at that moment.
That's a lot of memory for a two-year-old.
That's what I would just say.
Can you imagine that for 2 years old? I think that's remarkable.
And it's very clear.
A lot of people don't remember anything that happened at that age. Well, some of them don't remember their childhood at all, but very few remember earlier than the age of 5. Mm-hmm. But you're remembering it from, like, an adult perspective, too, and that's amazing for a two-year-old.
And then it was after that that I actually would see I guess what we would call spirit or whatever name people want to give to it. And there was a period of my time because of where I was, where I lived, and the religious orientation in my family, that there were challenges that went with that. Through the years, that has slowly dispelled itself. And so that was my journey.
You know, when they said it's not going to be easy, do you know what they did that? Do you know what they meant by that? Did you have a hard life, or was it just by being here on Earth, period?
If I look back on it, I look at maybe some of the challenges I've had in my life, and I sense sometimes the challenges I have in being able to see and the hesitancy of sharing that, and certainly in working in a world that for a very long time, the medical world, everything is very scientifically based. Everything is very physiologically based. That's been a challenge. That's been a huge challenge.
Yeah, she knows Ben Burgwell.
That's been like climbing up a mountain with a load on your back some days.
Yeah,
and then, you know, just when you think you've had enough, this you have an experience that almost like ignites the fire again that, you know, sometimes we end up in occupations in our lives for reasons that sometimes we may not be clear to us till we actually experience what we experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the way you call it challenges rather than problems, because we all have those things in our lives, and they're all to teach us something. Hmm. But all of this is what prepared you, Nola. Maureen, I know you're there. I'm not ignoring you, okay?
No worries.
But, Nola, this is what prepared you then for wanting to work with you got into the hospice and working with people that were dying.
Yeah, because I feel that, number one, we sort of have this, and this is my personal opinion, we sort of have this death experience, this death thing rather mixed up. And the part about it that I feel we have mixed up is we have this tremendous issue with people dying. And we never think of this little tiny baby in this womb where it's warm, it's nourished, that it's not having to face the challenges of this world, coming into this world, and everyone's very, very happy when a child's born, most time, and are celebrating the birth of that life.
Julie said, but the baby's crying.
The baby's crying because it's just been ejected out into the cold and is not where it's warm and what it's known while it's been in vitro. And then we look at a person, a soul, who has lived their life and has completed their journey here, and they are returning forward and to their next journey or to home or whatever people believe in. And for that to be almost as important, that transition into the light, into the next journey, we grieve that instead of celebrating that this soul has made a journey and to the best of their ability, and they move on. And it's like a graduation, not an ending.
Well, you know, there are some cultures that do celebrate it whenever
Absolutely.
They have wakes, especially in Ireland, the
Absolutely.
Places where they have a celebration. It's dead when the person has died. And they talk about the good things that they did in their life and things like that.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. But, I've investigated this for a long time, so it's always amazing to me that no matter who I talk to, it's always the same story and the same circumstances again and again. That's why I wrote my book, Between Death and Life. They always describe the same experience. They describe the same place that they go to. So we should know from all of that, it has to have validity. Nothing is contradicting each other.
No, and I've seen a lot of people make their transitions, and so many of them are smiling.
Yeah.
Which I think is incredible.
Well, Maureen, you never experienced that yourself, though, have you?
No, I haven't experienced, but what I have done is I've gone out and studied at the International Association of Near-Death Studies here in the world, and we have an incredible chapter in Seattle. And at their chapter meetings once a month, I went for 3 years, just continuously every month, just to listen to these near-death stories, as you did with your book, you know, Between Death and Afterlife, and to hear how similar those stories were. And one of the things I listened to just now when Nola said, you know, there were challenges about, you know, maybe coming into the, you know, continuing to stay in this world. The wonderful thing about that near-death experience is the sweetness that they so often explain that this transition is like on the other side, that they can't explain it in words, as you know. There's a kind of sweetness and joy. So I know that there's a struggle sometimes for those people to want to stay here as opposed to cross over to the other side. And so there can be also a little bit of challenge in that, too. And to really wanting to go back to that sweetness, you know.
Yeah, and the clients that I've worked with, you know, whenever they relive all of this during hypnosis, all they talk about is the incredible love on that other side. They said it's beyond anything you could comprehend. The total feeling of love. There is no evil, there is no hell, there's nothing like that. It's always just pure love when they cross over.
Mm. And truly, it's that unconditional love that connects us all, you know, in all these connections that we make with each other. I think it's remarkable when you study it and hear these experiences and look at the science and look at the spirituality that you can see how it comes back to love that connects us all, you know.
Well, that's what I've been told in my work. The only thing that's real is love.
Hmm.
But, you know, humans get it all mixed up and out of proportion.
I think that's a challenge, Dolores, of feelings. That may have been one of the challenges they spoke to.
But anyway, you became friends with Nola, and she began telling you these stories of the patients she had, or what?
We sat down together, and what was happening for me is people were starting to give me stories that they were experiencing, asking me, is this real? Did I really see my mother sitting at the edge of the tub? Is this real that I really smelled her perfume in the room? And when I brought this to Nola's attention, she you know, brought into me her near-death experience and her own intuitive abilities and said that, you know, she'd love to come on board and share some of her experiences, which she did in our book, growing up and having a, she actually saw, and you could maybe talk about that, Nola, you got to see your brother who had passed away right there in the room, and her father, didn't see your brother, but you saw your brother after he had passed away. And so then, anyway, we got together and we started to collect the stories, and together we sat down at the typewriter, and then, you know, we wrote on the philosophy, and that's how the book kind of became.
Mm. What you're talking about, Nola, was it your father that was dying and the brother came in?
The brother.
When I was 9, my brother passed away from cancer, and within 24 hours of his passing, I was, my grandmother had come to tell me. My mom was quite upset, and my grandmother had, you know, come and said, you know, your brother has gone away, which I think is always interesting, what word we give it. And I thought, well, I wonder where he's gone away, but I could see him, and it's like, I don't know where he's gone, but he's not away, he's here. And so what ended up happening was when our bedroom was in the basement when I was upstairs in the kitchen, and Mom was there, and it got brought up again. Someone said, well, where is he? And it's just, well, he's gone away. And I said, oh, no, he's not gone away. He's right here. And that was like, oh, no, he's not here, and don't talk about it. So my dad did not know I'd had that experience, but my dad, a few months later, after my brother had passed away, always made a point of, and this is in our book, it's one of the stories, of going around, turning off all the lights, closing the door, and shutting off the air cooler we had in the house before he went to bed. And he'd done that, and he woke up in the early hours of the morning and heard the air cooler on again. And it was like, you know, I thought I had turned it off. And he goes out to the living room, and standing in the living room near the air cooler is my brother, who had crossed. And my dad and my brother had an exchange of words. One of the things my dad had never had an opportunity to do before my brother passed was to tell him how much he loved him.
Mm.
And so it was a perfect opportunity. He told him how much he loved him, and he told him that he was welcome actually to stay in the house as long as he wanted to. You know, and, you know, he did hang out in the house for a while, by the way, and made visits periodically to see how we were all doing. And so my dad shared that experience with me about 7 months before he passed away, because he had never... we engaged in a wonderful conversation one evening, which opened the door, and he shared that conversation with me.
Mm. Do you still occasionally see your brother, or do you think he has stopped coming?
I don't see him as much. I see my dad about every 2 to 3 months, as well as I see two of my other sisters on the other side. Sometimes they kind of all come together, and it's just like dropping in to say hello. And, you know, I never know when to anticipate them. It's just like I get this sense, and there they are, and then off they go. I call it a flyby, Dolores. It's a flyby.
That's what I was thinking. You think that's all it is.
In the neighborhood.
It's in the neighborhood. Dropped in. See you later. Literally dropped in.
Well, I'd like to say that, you know, you don't always have to see your loved one, right. As you know, Dolores, and the stories that you've received from people, that they might smell their loved one, or they might just feel their touch, or they might have this knowingness in a dream that was truly them that came to them in that dream. Or it might just be that song, you know, that comes on the radio, or the lights that kind of flicker on and off, that they know that that's a signal. So I don't think you always have to see that apparition or that, you know, that being, to know that they're still with us, you know. But it's wonderful to have that opportunity, I suppose, to be able to do that.
You talk about smells. Yeah, I've had clients that said they could smell a pipe tobacco if their husband or their father smoked, mm-hmm. and they'll smell that mm-hmm. occasionally in the room, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So you know they're using that as a kind of a sign, I guess, to tell everybody they are there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe, you know, maybe they communicated with their mother quite a bit in the kitchen, and maybe she baked cookies all the time. And sometimes that communication was really about love when they were together in that kitchen, and she'll come back and you'll smell those cookies or those pancakes cooking or whatever it might be. And it's just remarkable how that vibration translates then to us, you know?
Using the different senses.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had people that smelled roses, things like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But none of this is anything to be afraid of. It's just very natural. But, you know, I have clients that come and they'll say, well, I want to know, is my father, their father died, is he all right? I want to know if he's okay. Where is he? And all of that, you know. And I keep trying to tell them he's perfectly fine. He's having a ball over there.
And sometimes, you know, we tell them to just set their intention that they'd like to have a visit.
Yeah. But
your intention, you'd like to have a visit, and if you always communicated with your dad in the car, then maybe he'll come to you in the car with that song on the radio.
Yeah.
Or if you'd like that lamp to go on and off, then ask him to turn the amp or the television on and off, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. See, that's your key right there, to ask. I think a lot of people forget that all you have to do is ask. If you want something, ask.
Mm-hmm. I think asking is a large part of it, and I think the other piece of it is that I do believe that our meetings between the two worlds, when the two sides come together, is mutual, and it's a mutual agreement between both parties on a certain level. And so to understand that you set your intention that you would like to have a visit, and I've had people say, well, I don't want them to scare me. I don't want, you know, anything scary to happen. And simply to set the intention that, you know, I would love to have a visit with you or contact with you. And can it be in such a way that it does not make me fearful? And a lot of times you'll see those people will have dreams. And the person will come to them in the dream. And the dreams are very, very different from a regular dream. And it has such a level.
Will happen with a smell or things like mm-hmm. that, because those are gentle ways.
Right.
So they won't make the person afraid.
Right. And then the dream occurs and people have it and they realize the dream is very different from a normal dream. And for most people, there is such a relief. And a lot of times they seek just validation. You know, I know Maureen's had it happen. I'm sure you have, all of us, where someone has said, you know, it just felt so real. Do you think it was real?
Mm-hmm.
And then going back to them saying, how does it feel for you? What do you know inside of yourself? How did this feel to you? I just know it was real. That's all that really matters. It was theirs, and it gave them a message.
Right.
Mm. And it's kind of trusting that knowingness that, yes, it was real, you know, that it helps people to have the confidence to know that their loved ones truly did come to visit them in the dream. But usually it's a sense of relief, and it's almost as if a weight has been lifted off the shoulders when they come to visit, because they know they're still connected with that unconditional love that connects us always.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell a few of the more stories from the book?
Maureen, you want to go?
I could probably tell my favorite story in the book, which is about Dalvin. And Dalvin is an engineer, and he lives in Western Washington, but his brother lived in Eastern Washington. And Dal was on a work project over in Eastern Washington, and his mother had died about a year before that. And Dal was in his brother's new home, had a brand new home that he had built. And it was in the morning, and Dal was up in the shower, and he was taking a shower. And the window was not open in the shower. The window was closed in the bathroom. And his brother didn't smoke, and his brother's wife didn't smoke, and he didn't smoke. And he said, Maureen, I smelled cigarette smoke when I was taking a shower. And he said, just at that moment, I turned my head, and there on the edge of the tub, he saw his mother puffing on her cigarette holder. She had a cigarette holder, and she was in her special red event dress that she wore when he was a child. And he smiled at her, because, of course, he's standing there in the puff in the shower. And all of a sudden, he turned his head, and he looked back, and she was gone. But he said, you know, I smelled her. He goes, that was Mom. I saw Mom right there. So, you know, of course, he goes down to his brother and tries to tell her, you know, his brother, you know, guess who I just saw in the bathroom of the shower. And his brother could say was, well, I hope she liked my new house. You know, it's like, he didn't really know what to say, but it was just so real to Dal. And he goes, Maureen, I haven't told that story to anybody. You know, here he's an engineer on that side of the brain that, you know, doesn't really accept.
Yeah, they're afraid of it. People think they're crazy, you know. But you probably wanted to check out the house.
Probably did. Wanted to check out the brothers. They were together, you know, celebrating this new home, you know. So that's a beautiful story that I love in our book.
Yeah. But, you know, that's it with this culture, with all the horror movies and all the TV and stuff. They make everybody afraid of ghosts and people that have died. But that's what I've been told in my work. Fear is an illusion. Fear is not real. But, you know, people like it. They like to be scared in movies and things. But there really isn't anything to be afraid of. Because when they go on, they're going to a very beautiful place, and they're very happy over there. And even if they do come back, they're just—it's always usually gentle, unless I guess.
And they're often much younger when they come back too. And Noel and I have talked about that. We truly believe that this vibration is so much higher on the other side, that that's how they come through in that high vibration of love, and when they were, you know, at their prime in this life. And they come through in that vibration when they come back. So they're often healed from their illnesses, or they don't have any injuries from the accident, and they look young and radiant and wonderful and powerful usually.
Mm-hmm.
They can. I mean, they can. I'm sure there's different cases for different people, but they can, that's for sure.
All the cases you've seen or you've heard about, that's how they've come through, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And what I've seen with people is that when you have someone, even when you're reading intuitively for someone, when you have someone who has had a family member that's died of a fairly significant chronic disease, or someone that was in an accident that was that took their life, it almost is like when you see them for the first time, the disease is absent, even very quickly after it's happened. You don't necessarily see how they were at the time of the accident, but you see them where it's almost like they've gone through phase one of releasing that event that occurred. And over time, I've seen them, you know, and I can use seeing my dad and certainly my sisters, that you see it just gets better and better. The radiance gets more and more and more and more as that progression of what we know as time on this earth, which in reality there's questionable that it even exists, passes, that you see it. And it's really quite amazing. It's just amazing.
Well, and that would be very relieving for a lot of people to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And the phenomenal part is we even see people here who overcome disease. And it's, you know, and it, the doctors shake their heads how in the world they overcome it. And the phenomenal piece of that is you will hear those people say, I was told I had a disease, but I am not my disease.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah, we always say in my work, to you name it, you claim it.
Exactly.
So that's all it's just your mind. It's your mind is so powerful that you can overcome it because you created it in the first place. And that's the way what I do in my work, just to show people you created this. Your mind is that powerful. If you created it, you can make it go away. But
and the body
so many
is very powerful, too, in terms of helping to heal,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of that mind-body connection, you know.
Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite stories in the book, actually, is the story of a small child whose father was the member of a volunteer fire department. They lived in a small town, and his father was died very quickly from a motor vehicle accident. And on the day of the celebration of life service for his life, I was actually sitting in the back of the church when this happened. And because he was part of the volunteer fire and rescue group, the fire department came in and they did the ringing of the bell.
Oh,
and it's really a beautiful tribute to a person's life because they do this ringing of the bell rings three times. And so when the bell rang the first time, this little boy, who was about two at that time, turned, got up from where he was sitting, and started walking up the aisle of the church where this celebration of life was being held. And just as cute as a bug, he started going from one side of the aisle to the other and acknowledging the people who had come. It's very interesting that a child that small would do it. And he was like someone about their business of just going and thanking people. You'd see him smile and he'd nod at them, look at them and nod and smile and then move to the other side of the aisle. And he did this up. And by the time he got up, the second bell rang, and so he started his little walk right back down the aisle. And when the bell rang for the third time, he stood, and in front of him, up on the screen, was the picture of his dad. And he stood there for a moment, and then he just went and sat down. And what was so interesting about it was there was no doubt his dad was not walking with him up that aisle thanking all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very fascinating to watch because it was like, get a load of this. It's almost like you go to a funeral, everybody shows up for their own funeral.
There you go. Yeah,
you
I think you would want to. I'd want to see who was there.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
Who's here? What are they saying? You know, what are they saying? What's going on? Gosh,
yeah.
Look at this.
Yeah. What are they saying?
Yeah.
What are they saying?
In my work, we've had them watch their funeral, and it's like, what are they so upset about? Can't they see how happy I am?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they crying? You know? That kind of a...
It was lovely. It was just lovely to watch. It was like, that is incredible. How things like that happen. And more people, I think, were so focused on what was being said on the podium, and I just was thoroughly entranced in watching this child, what he was doing. It was like, look at this.
That's so sweet.
Yes.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said you're working on another project. Are you working together on that?
So Maureen is working. So I'll let Maureen talk about her book project first.
Okay, are you helping with it, or is she the only one writing it?
Maureen's working on her book right now, just her.
Okay. Okay, Maureen, you want to tell us what you're working on?
Yeah, so I'm working on a similar book in the sense that I'm collecting stories of loved ones who have died in any war. And I've been interviewing several widows and widowers that are that have lost spouses in a war, sometimes family members in a war, and then they've received messages from them on the other side. And you think, well, why would you want to, you know, interview these young widows? That must be really difficult, and the grief must be overwhelming. But you know what? I'm finding that they're just the most beautiful, loving stories of being able to let go of their grief because of the connections that they're making, either in a dream or in a message that they've received from their loved one that has died. Spouses mostly, but so it's been really. I've been collecting the stories now. I'm going on to different sites of widows and widowers and family members and army, army connections. So it's been remarkable, the healing story that I'm discovering.
Are you finding them eager to talk to you, or?
Absolutely. I'm so surprised, actually, because I would think that the grief would be so difficult that it would be hard to kind of come through that layer of grief when they're so young, when they lose their husbands, that they're actually so excited to tell the story because, you know, they said they've celebrated their lives, their, you know, husbands or spouses or wives, their lives in terms of achievements, but they haven't been able to share that kind of special story where they've come to them in a dream or they've smelled them or they've just sensed that they know that they're with them and or their children, you know. And it's given them so much pleasure to be able to share with somebody about their story. And so it's been a chain of reactions of different widows talking to other widows saying that I'm writing the book and then they'll contact me. So it's been quite beautiful, actually.
Hmm. Here again, we're having a similarity, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Well, if there are anybody listening out there, if they want to share their stories with you, will you be willing to listen to them?
Oh, absolutely. That would be wonderful. Anybody?
Would you want them to email you, or how would you want them to contact you?
Yes, you know, they could email me, and that would be Maureen, M-A-U-R-E-E-N, at live, L-I-V-E, from theotherside.com. So just like our book, but Maureen at live from theotherside.com. That would be a way to connect with me. Some of the interviews we've connected on email, and then we've talked on Skype and been able to connect that way as well.
What was that last thing you said, Maureen?
You faded away.
We've also connected on Skype also.
Oh, yeah, that would be good, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's been great. Some of the widows prefer to, you know, speak in person instead of writing, and then others have preferred just to write. So.
Yeah.
Beautiful healing stories.
Because there are so many people that are having these things, and they have no one to talk to.
Because yeah, it's really true, Dolores.
Generation gap, the other generations don't understand. And they can't
tell
anyone.
The reporters want to interview them about the death itself and, you know, how it happened and what was he like as a person and this and that. It's like they're not really talking to them about what their experience has been afterwards and what this is like to, you know, receive a dream to know that their loved one is okay, you know.
Yeah.
Can you share any about, like, some of the messages you've gotten? Just real...
I can share one that I think is really quite beautiful, and it's just a simple story, and it's about a fellow who died. He was killed in action in Afghanistan, and his name was Jim, and he was a very big skydiver, loved to skydive, and he logged thousands of jumps and mostly loved a crew where skydivers made formations together. And he, on the day of his burial in Arlington National Cemetery, it was really, really hot. I mean, it was so hot and muggy. Everything was absolutely still on this July day, you know. But his widow had looked up at the sky at that time, and right when he was being buried, and she noticed that there was this absolute clearing in the sky. All the clouds were kind of separating, And she looked up, and as she looked up, she felt this incredible cool breeze just come down over her whole body like it was being washed, she said. And she said, this was like the hottest July day you could imagine. I mean, there wasn't any breeze going on. And she just looked up, and she said, I know, Jim, that you would have wanted to skydive on a day like today, you know. And I know that you're giving me that message. And it was, and she, like, smiled. She said, you know, I could feel him. I could feel that breeze just come right down on me and that love that he had that he loved to do when he, you know, when he skydove, you know, in the sky. So that was quite sweet. And sometimes, you know, the message is just quite simple, but it's so, it's that knowingness, you know, that this widow had when she was right by his grave. She said it was so refreshing. It was like this unusual breeze that just came down. And she just said, I just felt like this was him in heaven just coming right through me, you know.
See, it usually so is an individual thing that wouldn't mean anything to anybody else. They'll say, well, it's just a coincidence or something. But it is an individual thing that is important to the person that's experiencing it.
Right, that grief, you know, just help her to let go of that grief and of that loss, you know.
Okay. Well, I think it's going to be a good book, so I encourage you to keep on working on it.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
But, you know everything.
I wish we had the time to be able to work together, but, you know, it's so difficult with two careers to be able to sit down, and that was a special time in our lives to kind of carve out that time to do that, but...
Yeah.
Maybe Nola can talk a little bit about what her project is now that you're working on.
Okay, we'll get to that next then. But that's what I do. I accumulate all this stuff, and then you have to find time to sit down and put it all together. So I know what you're going through. But I encourage you to keep on with it. Okay, Nola,
what's your project?
Well,
I appreciate that.
in spending time looking at hospice, how hospice is in this world at this point, and also looking at how big palliative care is becoming in this nation. In discussion with people who have worked in hospice and my own experiences, one of the things that I have come to profound conclusion about is how we care for the soul. As we are moving through palliative care treatment, which can be 2 or 3 years, you know, when someone is chronically ill, to actually the hospice component of how we care for that soul. And it's a very different process than the physical care we give to people and how we nurture it and help support it on its journey through the journey it's making. And so in a way, it's very non-tangible, Dolores, but in a way, it's very tangible.
Yeah.
Of helping, my ultimate goal would be to design a program where people who work in healthcare receive a level of training in it. And it becomes part of how all of us that care for people begin to utilize that intuitive side of ourselves and that listening part of our souls and how we connect to each other to do that soul work.
I think that's fantastic because, as you said earlier, you know, medicine and the healthcare field is so scientifically based that, like, when I was working as a nurse, so many times you forgot there was a person there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all the machines, it's the disease, it's the whatever. You forget, I mean, it's all around them. It's not addressing the person. And this would be wonderful to make that connection again, to get it back in touch with, because it doesn't matter. All that other stuff does not matter. It's that person. You know, it really needs to take that kind of a step. So good for you.
Yeah, we get very lost in tasking in our lives, and I can claim first place for that. And so, you know, I just keep going back to the care of the soul, 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 and how we move ourselves from, yes, there are tasks we have to do, we have to complete each day, but there's also this other task, and it's the care of the soul.
Yeah, because so many of, you know, they just think, well, it's just a body. That's all we are. But we are not a body. You have a body. The soul is the most important part, but they lose sight of that. If they say it's just the person.
Right.
That's all they focus on, is the machine, rather than what's inside of it, keeping it operating.
Right.
And, you know, we lose sight of that it's easier to treat emotional and to treat physical, and you know, Dolores, from the work that you have done as a therapist, that probably some of the best work has been done in the connection that's been made with that soul.
Yes.
It is so powerful and so big, how it helps. And the decisions that soul makes are their decisions. It's part of their journey. But to understand that connection and to be part of that journey in helping in whatever way that soul is accepting of that is important.
I'm really glad that I have seen all of this evolving over the years and how people are changing and they're beginning to see all of this from a different viewpoint. We keep saying the veil is thinning. People are becoming more aware of it. And this is a very important time to be alive right now with all these things happening.
Okay. And Dolores, in your work, I'm sure that you've found that this connection is so universal across cultures. I mean, you travel all around the world. It's not just limited to our little world here.
It's everywhere.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're seeing. It everywhere I give lectures and everything, there are more and more people than... People keep saying, well, or do they understand it in England? What about China? It's universal now.
It's universal.
Worldwide, everybody is getting it, and that's the important thing. We're coming to time. We're going to have to sign off, but I want you to tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to contact you. Now, Maureen gave her, is that the only way you want to contact you, Maureen, is through your website?
Sure. Maureen at livefromtheotherside.com. But I also want to say, before Nola gives her contact information, that we wanted to thank Ozark Mountain Publishing for publishing our book and to allow those people to buy that Kindle, you know, order our book online from Ozark and or on a Kindle, and we appreciate the work.
Yeah, the name of the book is Live from the Other Side. Okay, Nola, how do you want them to contact you if they want to reach you?
Okay, and they can reach me at Nola at Live. FromTheOtherSide.com. And if they want to send me an email, then what happens from there is I move out to actually calling them if they want to talk, setting up a time that mutually works.
Okay. And the name is Nola, N-O-L-A.
N-O-L-A.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's wonderful, and I hope that you will be contacted.
I hope so, too.
Yeah, and people out there can know they have somebody to talk to.
Right.
Okay, well, we're going to have to sign off.
You have a safe journey to Guadalajara.
Oh, thank you. Have a good time in Guadalajara.
Thank you, Dolores. Thank you, Dolores, so much.
The hour has gone very quickly. So thanks for coming on tonight. And I want to thank everyone for listening. Thanks, everybody. Now let's have a good night then.
Make it great.